Hey, everybody. My name is Christopher Thomas Plant.
My name is Russ Farshtick.
And welcome to The Resties, where the best of the rest discuss the rest of the best. This week, we are talking about Vampire Survivors. That's right. Tons of big budget flashy games with entire marketing campaigns that appear in like the Super Bowl or whatever are out there. And we are talking about a game that is available right now on your laptop for $2.99. And when I say your laptop, I mean probably any laptop because it works on PC and Mac. We'll also, in the spirit of Vampire Survivors, be talking about our top five best bang for your buck video games. And in the back half, I don't know. Freshick has a surprise for me, so we'll see what that is.
It's a surprise topic. I don't want people to get too enthusiastic about the potential, but I do have a topic I wanted to discuss.
That's true. It does sound like there also might be a guest star, and I don't think that there's going to be any other guest stars. I think it's just the two of us today.
Yes.
Yes. Well, first, let's get into Vampire Survivors right after this break. Okay, Fresh, how much do you know about Vampire Survivors?
I mean, I've seen screenshots of it. I know Justin talked about it on Besties this past week. He played it during, or 2 weeks ago, he mentioned it in the honorable mentions. I read a bit of his review on Polygon.com, which is very glowing, but I have not played it myself. I haven't had the time, and I want to. It seems very much my kind of game.
Here is my elevator pitch. It is either a 10 out of 10 or a 0 out of 10.
Wow.
And my opinion of it changes depending on where I'm at.
Like, interesting.
Existentially. It's, okay, here, the way it works visually, I actually don't think this is the way it actually works, but the way it appears to work, if you watch a video of it is a top-down 2D game in which you are the titular vampire survivor. It looks like, you know, bad Castlevania art, right?
Yeah, it's like Centipede or like old-timey arcade game.
Old-timey arcade game. Yeah. And enemies are surrounding you from all sides. At first, it's like a handful, then it's dozens, then it's hundreds, then it's like, it feels like thousands? I don't know. It fills the screen with these 2D characters. And all you have to do is move around. There are no button presses. Your character automatically fires off their weapon, and that could be a whip that fires off every second or so. It could be like a little magic missile. It could be a power-up that you retrieve, like garlic, which makes a plume of garlic stank around you and kills off, obviously, vampires, because vampire survivors. And the goal is to kind of mix and match.
So you're not a vampire, just to be clear. You're not a vampire survivor. You're surviving vampires.
Yeah, right. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're not like a vampire who's playing the game Survivor or something.
Or like who is also a survivor because he's been drinking blood to survive.
No. It's like that you have a... So there are actually multiple characters that you can choose from.
Yeah, the many survivors.
They're the plural survivors, and you are surviving vampires.
And none of them are also a vampire.
Not that I've
like
noticed.
An Alucard situation where there's a nice vampire.
Well, it's actually, that's a good question, because we'll get into the lack of story and whether a game like this should have a story.
Okay.
But first... That's the game. The whole goal is to like kind of manage which upgrades you get, because every time you find, you basically, once you kill enemies, they release little gems, and then you can step over the gems to collect them. And as you get the gems, you get XP. And the more XP you have, the more abilities you can unlock. And those abilities could be, like I said, garlic, or it could be flames that go in random directions. Any variety of skills. There's like a boomerang cross that fires to the thing that's nearest to you, but then slings across the screen in the opposite direction. So you actually kind of use it to fire behind you to deal a lot of damage, right?
Yeah.
It's choosing which of those are the best and then matching them up. And it's extremely addictive. Runs can last between like 10 minutes. I think if you get to 30 minutes, that is when you beat the game. I've made it to about 26 minutes.
Wow.
I'm pretty good. But here's where I the rub is. When you do these runs, you make money. You like collect coins. You can find a little treasure chest, right? And that money goes to permanent unlocks between vampires surviving. And there's a lot of unlocks. There's unlocks kind of like Hades, you know, of unlocking the speed of the projectiles that you fire, or your health, or your shields, yeah, or your ability to revive, all that stuff, right? And this is where I'm torn on, like, what do I want from a video game? Because effectively, what I found after, you know, probably 6 or so hours of this game is the game is the grind.
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing else so far. And it's in early access. So they could add more. But it's not like this is, like, you know, a visual feast. There's no story. And the game in the marketing compares it, I think, like, they use a phrase called, like, be the bullet hell. But it's not that. Because bullet hells, to me, are skill-based. You aren't unlocking unique permanent powers that, you know, the 20th time you play the bullet hell, somehow it's easier.
Sure.
You're just getting better at bullet hells. Where this is like, I don't necessarily feel like I'm getting better. I feel like I'm just giving the game more time, and then it's giving me unlocks that will make it easier for me to win.
Yeah, so there have been a few games like this that have done something. I mean, Hades, you mentioned Hades. Rogue Legacy, same thing. And what those games do is, once you more or less unlock everything, it sort of unlocks what I would describe as like an end game, where the difficulty is basically static. Like, you have all the tools at your disposal, and then they can ramp up the difficulty because you're not getting more unlocks, and you know, can like add challenge that way. And again, if it's early access, I'd imagine that's something that maybe will come later. But I do agree with you. Like, I know what you're talking about, where it's like not the most satisfying thing to feel like inevitably you will beat this game.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think
you could say that about, like, I don't know, every Bethesda open world game. Like, you just get more and more powerful until you beat it, right?
Yeah. Well, and my problem isn't necessarily that, and like the transparency of seeing, you know, the reptile part of my brain just being triggered. It's that there's, I think it's the nothing else that gets a little under my skin. Let's use any of those examples, right? Like the Bethesda games, there's still story there. Rogue Legacy even still has something to say about, like, lineage.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's silly to say it. It feels a little silly to say it has a message, but it actually does. Like,
Also the minute to minute is enjoyable. And
yeah,
you get satisfaction out of a good run versus a bad run.
Yeah, but like, I guess I really admire when a game with really interesting mechanics then is using those mechanics to get at something beyond it. I think of like Universal Paperclips, right? Which is one of those idle games that we've talked about a lot. And idle games are the ones where the game kind of plays itself and it's just accruing numbers, and then you tap now and then to fuss with the math formula so that the numbers go up even faster. And Universal Paperclips takes that idea and then asks, okay, what if an AI was told to do this to just create paperclips? What would it end up doing if it just had to keep creating over and over and over again? And it becomes this like work of like sci-fi horror. And I think that's the thing that I guess I'm missing here. And I hope that's, you know, again, it's in early access that that's what gets added. Hades is another great example, right? Like, sure, Hades has the same mechanism, but Hades has like a trillion things to offer.
Yeah, but when it came out, it was an early access game.
That's true. That's true.
And didn't have a trillion things when it came out. I mean, it was a good game when it came out, but it was not a game of the year game.
That's true. You know what? Now you're pushing me back towards the 10 out of 10.
Boom.
I like a game like this that messes with my head like this and gets me thinking, like, am I wasting my time?
Yeah.
And like, what does it even mean to waste my time? Like, would it be bad if I was playing this and it was doing literally nothing else than like triggering my pleasure parts of my brain?
Yeah.
That's something. Yeah. I don't know. Do you worry about that, or am I just like very anxious?
I think you are definitely more anxious than I am, but I also internalize this stuff and try to play games in the most, probably not the best way, but it is, I try to play games the most productive way possible, which is to say, like, I'll dial it down to easy if I feel like I'd enjoy the gameplay more that way, or I'll see more stuff that's cool. I don't know. I'm very targeted in terms of how I play games.
Yeah.
So, I get the argument. I think there are good and bad versions of this. Again, I haven't played Vampire Survivors, so I can't say how I would feel. But I do agree with you that just the power curve alone is usually not enough for me, unless it's Crackdown.
Credit to
like the only example.
Yeah. Credit to the designers here. The power curve here is incredible. I mean, they are just straight up using the playbook of like pay to win / free to play games in terms of visuals, and just constantly being fed that just pop of color. Whenever you open a treasure chest, it just rains vertically, like upside down coins everywhere. It's something. And I don't know. I really struggle with my words with this sort of thing, because I put that much time into it. It's clearly working with me, but at the same time, it feels a little bit like addiction, where I knew it would do this the second I downloaded it, of, you know, oh great, this is going to take over my life. And sure enough, it did, which makes it kind of a strange recommendation, because I feel like, oh, do I really want to recommend something is going to consume people like this?
This is actually, we'll get to it in the second half, but this is actually a really good segue to the second half discussion. So I'm looking forward to that.
In the meantime,
though, I know at the top of the show you mentioned that we were going to figure out our top five, but I think that might be too wide ranging, and maybe we should probably just focus on like personal faves in terms of bang for your buck games.
Okay.
Five seems like a lot.
Oh, I have a list. I'm ready.
Oh, really? You brought a whole list?
I came prepared. I feel like I know.
I mean, I have a list in my head, but I don't know.
How about we start putting some games together of what are our, like, you're going to, you know, put down a little bit of cash here and you're really going to get your money's worth.
Okay, sure.
What's your first one? What is the thing?
Well, my first one is you're going to put down no cash whatsoever.
Okay.
Impulse control,
you're
which I have done in the past. Uh-huh. I'm gonna say Fire Emblem Heroes.
Oh, okay.
I think we should include one free to play game in this category, and Fortnite would certainly apply that as well.
Okay,
but at this point, Fire Emblem Heroes is a game that I have been playing for over 5 years. It is my, like, I have to wait 30 seconds for the elevator game. And there is no other game that I play with that level of consistency. I play this game very weird. We were talking about how I play, like, certain games and what I get out of it. I play this game very weird, such that every decision that I make in the game is fueling me not having to spend money in the game. And I turn the free-to-play aspects of it as into the game. So the only characters that I ever, like, you know, there's like a loot box, gachapon, you know, slot machine thing. But you can earn free currency to, like, get them if you're careful. So the only ones that I ever go for are ones that I know will make the game easier for me to continue getting more currency. And not because, oh, this character is pretty, or oh, I like their backstory. It's only, oh, they're a meta character and I want to, like, min-max the way I play this game.
So that you can then unlock more opportunities to min-max the game.
Exactly.
To not get the characters that you actually like.
Exactly. So now,
great.
Now, let me, I'm not saying this is a healthy thing, but I'm just saying how I play it. Let me also add a caveat. If you have any level, I'm not saying this is like a denigration, because I certainly have this to some extent on some things as well. If you have any level of like lack of willpower when it comes to like loot box mechanics, gambling mechanics, anything like that, do not play this game. It's not for you. I mean, it is for you, but not in a good way. It is definitely designed to take advantage of those sorts of people and make a lot of money. And it has made a ton of money. But I don't know. For me, again, I get a lot of satisfaction out of playing the game to not spend money. And from that, I've really enjoyed myself. I don't know if that makes the list necessarily, but strictly from a bang for your buck game, there's probably no more bang for your buck, at least for me, than Fire Emblem Heroes.
I think I think that is a good recommendation, and it's a game that has meant a lot to you, and I think you're right to include it. Will it make the final five? I don't know.
I don't know.
So my version of that game is Drop 7.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that game?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so Drop 7 is a puzzle game where you line up numbers and make them disappear, Tetris style. And it, I believe, was originally developed for the TV show Bones.
And what? Then,
yeah, it was like a SpawnCon game.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the developers Area Code made their own version called Drop 7. And then that game got purchased by, well, all of Area Code, I believe, got purchased by Zynga. And now Drop 7, I believe, is still available on iOS and maybe Android. And it's great. It's just, I wish I had more to say about it, but I don't. It's a pretty straightforward puzzle game, but there's something about the feel of it that is transcendent.
Yeah, I think if you've played threes, it definitely like is kind of similar brain action going on, and the feel of that also matches.
Yeah, and it's that same thing, like you said, of I've just over the course of, I mean, it was one of the first iPhone games, I think. It was very early on, and I have had it on my phone ever since then. So I've probably been playing it longer than almost any other game I play.
Yeah, it's funny. For puzzle games like that, I usually, after I'll get into it for like pretty heavy for like a week or two, and then I'll bounce off of it just because like you get so good that like games start lasting a really long time, or you just hit a ceiling where you feel like you're not learning anything new or doing anything new, and I just sort of depart. But that's just me.
That's very fair. Okay, so what is another one that you have?
Well, I guess I can't pick Fortnite at this point because
I think Fortnite and Fire Emblem are very different games.
I think that is true. I would say
they're both free.
They are both free. I think Fortnite is a lot less gross on the like loot boxy element, because there are no loot boxes in Fortnite. I don't know if I need to describe what fucking Fortnite is, but it's a battle royale game. And originally it launched as this weird like player versus environment like defense, tower defense thing, hence the name Fortnite, because it's F-O-R-T, right? Mm-hmm. And the zombies attacked at night. And now it's just pretty much just a battle royale game. And there's like 2% of the player base plays the weird PvE mode.
Which you do about. To once again scam money.
Yeah, it's the same thing as Heroes, is I get actually a lot of satisfaction playing that mode just because I've set it up in such a way that, again, I can set it to run and it'll go for like an hour and a half, and I'll come back and I'll have earned currency that I can then spend in the game that I actually enjoy playing.
This is just mining Bitcoin.
Basically, they could hook up my computer to like a Bitcoin server and probably do pretty well.
Gosh.
But unfortunately, it's not Bitcoin. It's V-Bucks, which are the currency in Fortnite. And all you can do with V-Bucks are buy like Batman skins and like a grappling hook and like Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. you just buy like cosmetics. And I get a lot of satisfaction. They do a really good job on a lot of the cosmetics. They just, they didn't announce it. It leaked that they're doing like old-timey Cuphead style versions of some of the characters that are in the game, like the banana character and stuff. And like, that's a satisfying way for me to spend the dumb currency that I'm earning through this free-to-play system. But it's a great multiplayer game. I think, I really can't think of a better like online ease of jumping in game, because it supports cross-play and it's very easy to get in, you know, into a game with your friends. And I started playing in 2017, whenever it launched, and off and on, I've jumped back into it. And now I'm back into it pretty hardcore.
Kind of Destiny. Has it fully replaced Destiny for you?
Yeah. I mean, I have not touched Destiny in several years at this point. And again, I think I've talked about this, but the the drop off on Destiny was purely just, I couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah.
And Fortnite, it's the opposite of that, because the fact that I played at the origin, at the beginning of Fortnite, actually gives me not an advantage, but like a little bit of a cool factor, because I'm using like characters that you can't get anymore because they got retired. So true. Like little 12-year-olds will run up to me and be amazed. I'm not proud of that, but I'm a little proud of that.
I think you're pretty proud. I have another game that is another online game with co-op where you shoot things. It is Earth Defense Force.
Oh, God.
The entire series.
That's, I don't, okay, bang for your buck, sure.
It is the, of all the things here, I would say the quintessential bang for the buck game, because it was originally conceived, okay, first, what's the game? The game is open world maps where you are the Earth Defense Force, and you have to defend the planet from giant aliens and bugs. And they are huge. Mm. I mean, we're talking like Godzilla, them, like, all the blob, like that sort of stuff going, right?
Yeah.
And it is a mess of a game series for the most part. The open worlds are fully destructible, so you can shoot down skyscrapers, but it looks more like, I don't know, like the geometry like just like sinking into the ocean. Yes,
yeah, it looks like a PS2 game. It's not... Yeah. It's never been a pretty series.
No. But the reason that it looks like that and the reason it does all these weird things is because they set out to create cheap games. It was part of a series of games made in Japan that I can't remember the specific price. I want to say it was like basically $20 US, where the game was like not fully finished or polished and was one great gimmick. And then it just kind of ballooned into this ongoing series, which you can play tons of these games on Steam. I love these games. They are broken, but I feel like you can just play this forever. It is like perfect, mindless, cause some mayhem with your friends. I would say it's like the modern equivalent of what the beat-em-up was back when we were kids.
Yeah.
You played like the arcade beat-em-up, and it's like, is this really challenging me, or is this really great? No, but it does give me something to do while I like hang out with my pals.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, this is obviously goes down to personal preference, and I know you have a lot of fondness for EDF. I think it feels and plays like dog shit. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a fun game to play, and there are other games that are like that wacky and outrageous that feel like way better and aren't like... The menus and the controls feel like totally clumsy and weird. I wish it felt better
because
I love
any of this.
I love the trappings of it, like the giant ants and stuff. I love it. It's great. Destructible, awesome. Giant like rocket launchers, super cool. It just doesn't feel very good.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I can't argue with it. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
But I do have a very special place in my heart for it. What about you? I think we actually agree on I saw you write down. This was my next one too.
Gotta be Stardew Valley for my
next
one.
It's kind of incredible.
You know, people gave us a little bit of crap because we did not include Stardew Valley in the best portable games list that we did on the last Resties. And that's fair. It is definitely a valid addition. There was, in the back of my mind, I didn't vocalize this, but a hesitance on portable Stardew being friendly to portable. Stardew, weirdly, you cannot save in the middle of a day. You can, like, sleep your Switch, and that's fine. But you can't, like, if it's 2 p.m. and your Switch powers off or whatever, you lose all that progress. And that makes it kind of not the best portal game. But ignoring that one minor fault, it is so good. And for $20 has given me just years of... free content that, you know, the Concerned Ape, the developer, has added over the years. And I mean, we just fawned about this game during Game of the Year very recent, or, you know, best games of the last 10 years very recently. But I mean, man, talk about just a boatload of stuff that has just poured in for free since that initial paltry $20 investment. $20 is nothing for the amount of value I've gotten out of this game. It's so good.
Yeah, and it was great at launch. Like, yeah. That's what's wild. For me, I had this on my list because of all of the stuff you mentioned, but also because of the mods. Like, the amount of creative content that is made by the fan community for this game is tremendous. And that and the developer's own, like, I would say favoring PC with updates is why it wasn't on the mobile list for me. I look forward to playing it on Steam Deck. I think that will be very nice to have some overlap. But yeah, that's why I didn't quite make the list there. But it definitely makes it here. It's fantastic. I'm trying to think of other stuff. So, I mean, I'll just share some other stuff that I have because we're getting into some like classics. So you'll just, I know where we're going to go here. I have on my list, I have NCAA college football. And the reason I have that, I'm not saying we're going to add it, is because it's the last one that was made has just had to continue to be NCAA college football. And people are left to like keep updating it. And I think there are a few games like this, like Tecmo Bowl. People keep updating it. NHL, I think 95, 96. The Fire Pro Wrestling games. There are these games that like have kind of taken on a life of their own post-release. But whether or not any of those should be on here, I don't know. I have Kentucky Route Zero because, you know, you bought the first episode and then you got the rest of the game over the course of a decade. But is that like a recommendation I can make right now? Not as much. And here's the one that I think you will agree on, but I don't know the perfect example of this kind of like pseudo genre is open world games where the fun part of the game is just being in the open world. So it's not like going and climbing towers and unlocking things.
Yeah, sure.
It's Just Cause 2, Red Faction, Guerrilla is like one of these.
Yep. I mean, Breath of the Wild is one of those too.
Yeah, I think Breath of the Wild is definitely one of those. But it's Breath of the Wild is a Nintendo game, so it will never cost less than a
that's
full
true.
Price.
Yeah, Red Faction's probably the one of those because it's so old at this point that it's probably pretty cheap to buy.
Yeah.
And I think they just re-released it on modern consoles.
So remastered.
Remastered, edition. Yeah, because it's set on Mars. It's funny.
Okay, I feel like we have a good list here. Do you have any other ones that you would want to add?
No, I think this is pretty good. So long as we delete EDF, I think we're good.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna delete EDF and I'm gonna delete Fire Emblem Heroes.
That's fine.
And that gets us down to
four.
Wait, that's Fire Emblem Heroes stays.
Yay!
Wow. Okay, I'll accept it. You know what?
Don't go broke playing it, please. Don't feel bad.
There's an Earth Defense Force in Red Faction Guerrilla, so in a way, I still kind of won.
That's true.
Great. Those five games are Fire Emblem Heroes, Drop 7, Fortnite, Stardew Valley, Red Faction Guerrilla, either the normal edition or the remastered edition. You can't go wrong either way. Those are our top five best bang for your buck video games.
Okay, Chris, so we are coming now off of Super Bowl Sunday. Are we allowed to say that? Super Bowl? We don't have to say the big game.
This I mean, it's been a little while thing. Since the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's a couple weeks
episode, but sure.
At this point that you're listening to this. And your team, the Chiefs, didn't quite make it this year, came very close.
Very close.
But lost in the game, what is that, the AFC? NFC? Yeah. Which division?
In the AFC Championship.
AFC Championship. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, and I don't want to scare people away because this has been running in my head for the last couple years, but it is about sports. Please don't be scared. I think you might find this interesting. So when, I was raised as a diehard New York Knickerbockers fan, the Knicks in the NBA. I was a Mets fan. I continue to be. New York Giants. You know, I have my teams. But what I've found over the years is the more I care about sports, the more anxious and stressed out I get. Yeah. Like if my teams start doing well, it makes me not super happy because it just stresses me out and kind of throws my entire life on its edge.
Yeah.
The most recent example, many of the teams that I follow are not very good, but the most recent example that springs to mind is when the Mets played the Kansas City Royals in the yes. World Series. And, you know, throughout that entire playoffs, I was like staying up super late to watch the games, every pitch, my like heart rate was spiking. I was like super into it. And obviously disappointed when they lost. And given the fact that almost every team, except for one, has that experience every single season, invariably, you are going to experience a lot of disappointment when watching sports. And I guess I wanted to talk to you a little bit about whether you feel like you get the right things out of watching sports, or whether you think it's not necessarily worth the time. And this is not to denigrate sports as a catalog, as a group, but just as a watching,
yeah,
a watching effort. I'm curious whether you think it's good or bad.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I think this has a lot to do with games. Obviously, sports are games, and fandom and parasocial relationships, which are becoming like much bigger things thanks to podcasts, Twitch streams, YouTube, right? I don't think that there's like a huge gulf between the people that we like to follow on the internet and like the sports teams that we're fans of. So there's that. In terms of what do I get out of it? Well, I think I get why you might have a problem. And my theory is that you should not be a New York sports fan. That's your problem. And it's not because New York sports fans are good or bad. It's because the expectation in New York City is that you're a New Yorker and you should win.
And I mean, not for the Mets.
Well, no. I know it's not for the Mets, but they're still not underdogs. They're still a New York team.
That's and true. They do spend a colossal amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah. So I the Chiefs are like kind of in the middle of it for me, of teams I love, but whether I get pleasure out of them. The team that I have enjoyed the most watching and enjoy watching now, and I enjoy when they succeed, are the Kansas City Royals. Because the Kansas City Royals are a bad baseball team. They won the World Series when I was born. They were basically terrible from then until they had a 2-year, almost flukish run where they went to the World Series twice. They won the second time against, obviously, fresh as Mets. And then they immediately went back to being awful. And I had no expectation for them to be good ever again. And when they were good, you were right. It was very stressful. It was all consuming for like, as the season went on, I could see them doing well. And as we got into the playoffs, I had to watch every game. But every win felt like a gift. And I never felt entitled to anything. Hmm. And that's good and healthy sports fandom. When it gets bad is when you like good teams, in my opinion. So I have a lot of family in Ohio. I think we've talked about this in the Toledo area. And Toledo is right between Michigan, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Three like excellent football programs. Well, varying degrees. And I'm an Ohio State fan. Being an Ohio State fan is awful because you just expect to win. So yeah. When you watch the regular exhibition games, you're not taking pleasure in it a whole lot. You're mostly like waiting to see the desired outcome. And then if you don't get it, you're like upset.
It's all downhill, basically. You're starting at 100 and you can only lose points at that point.
Right. So the season isn't super fun. And now, and most recently, obviously, the Chiefs have started to do very well. We have one of the greatest pro athletes in any sport, Patrick Mahomes. And that puts us in a really funny spot, because here we are, the Chiefs, a team that, you know, I would not small to medium market team that suddenly has a, you know, Hall of Fame coach, a Hall of Fame tight end, a Hall of Fame quarterback. And we are not the underdogs. But at the same time, like we're not the Patriots. You know, we haven't just win every Super Bowl. So I don't know. I there was a part of me, if I'm being really honest, when we lost this year in like the game before the Super Bowl, there was a part of me that felt kind of good about it. And I don't know if that's because my brain is a little broken, but I was I I don't know if I like being that team. I don't know if I like the idea that, like, oh, I this thing is going to be a thing that I feel entitled to, and that the national conversation will be about dynasties and how much can we win. That doesn't seem. I mean, I know from experience with Ohio State that that's not fun.
Yeah, I would also add that I think, for me, the like best moments, best sports memories that I have are as simple as like going over to my buddy's place, drinking a few beers. I mean, I remember going to your apartment and we watched the Royals. Well, that was not the World Series where they played the Mets. It was one of the playoffs.
Yeah, when they played the Astros.
When they played the Astros, right. And that was like a really fun, like memorable experience that for the last 2 years has been
ripped. Sorry, played the Giants that year. We beat the Astros. No, don't worry about it.
Well done. But for the last 2 years has basically been ripped out of it. And I think watching sports from your house alone, I mean, that's the only safe way to do it for the last 2 years, but it really, you definitely lose something.
That's a good point. And that's actually why I've really cherished like football during all of this, is because it's like, it gave Steffi and I something to look forward to. Like it was something to break up the week. Where like during the pandemic, everything felt the same, and she really loves football and knows every player's name, and that gave us something like to look forward to and talk about. And it was like something that was happening in the outside in the real world. And we honestly watched way more football games that were not teams that we cared about, but were just, you know, it was something to like do and watch out, you know, either in Texas or in California, we would just watch it outside. And it gave us an excuse to be outside during the fall and winter.
Yeah, I almost think for people that like aren't necessarily like a fan of a specific team, I kind of think fantasy is the way to go. Fantasy football, because it really does take a lot of the emotion out of it, because you're not rooting for, you're just rooting for individuals at that point. So you can like get excited when this individual player makes a big play, but you don't have the like legacy of like, the team that I've been following for 30 years might make it to the Super Bowl. Like, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, oh, you might win a dumb trophy that, you know, is like a shoebox that your friends made. It's spray painted gold.
I think this is why the NBA has become so popular, because, you know, a lot of baseball and football fandom is based on like where you live and your team. Well, the NBA feels like it's much more player driven. Mm-hmm. And that seems kind of natural, especially with our generation, is more people live in a different place than where they were born, or have lived multiple different places. Learning to just love a sport because you like to watch people do really incredible things.
Yeah.
I think great. And I hope this can connect with people who, you know, watch streams or anything like that. Because that ultimately, like, that's what I really like about it, is I love just seeing incredible things happen. And it's why I honestly struggle to watch like any video game sports, is because I just have trouble reading it. Mm-hmm. You know, when I watch a great football play or a great baseball play, I can tell what the hell's happening.
Instantly. And I would just say, like, to that same extent on the video game side, like, just like sports is like, constantly interrogate what you're getting out of it and whether the things you're getting out of it are positive or negative. Are you more often than not coming away angry or upset, or are you satisfied, or are you getting like social engagement that you weren't getting previously? Like, constantly like look inside yourself and make sure you're getting the right things. You know, that the same thing applies to what you were talking about in the first segment about you know, playing a game with a power curve and not feeling like you're actually in it. It's really up to you whether that's a satisfying way to spend your time or not. And just kind of listening to yourself is important, and I think will make you a happier person.
Did I ever show you or tell you about my what I consume spreadsheet?
Yeah, I've seen it. You posted it on Twitter, correct?
Yeah. And like, what I love about that is it makes it really obvious where I'm spending my time. And the way this works for people who have not heard me talk about this is I document any media I consume. So this could be books, comics, games, podcasts, Now I include my learning Japanese as part of this, and I document it all in 15-minute increments in a spreadsheet. So if I put 15 minutes in, it goes in the spreadsheet under that thing, and I label the category. And then at the end of the month or the year, I can see how much time I'm spending in things, both compared to other things that I do, but also just raw hours. And what is good about that is, like what you said, it really helped me see, oh, wow, I am spending a ton of time watching football, or I'm spending a ton of time watching movies. And that's not necessarily bad. I might actually feel like very good about that. When I decided to start learning Japanese, it was honestly because of this, because I looked at it and I was like, oh, you know what? I bet I could do half that amount of time in movies and put all of that towards, you know, learning Japanese in my week, and I would still feel pretty good about everything. Yeah. And I don't think everybody should do that. I think that is like very much just my own weird neuroses. But I completely agree with you of being really mindful of your time. It's an easy thing to not make time for, but you get so much from it in return if you do actually take a moment to think about it.
Very good. I like
this.
What
a nice little sports topic. What a surprise.
Yeah, I know.
Do you have any recommendations for like outside of video games and sports?
Yeah. You go first.
Okay. Have you heard about The Rescue?
No.
Okay. So it's a documentary, came out, I think, like late last year. It's on Disney Plus, and it is about the cave scuba divers who saved the young boys' soccer team in Thailand. Do you remember
that
happened?
One that Elon Musk got involved in briefly?
Elon Musk said he was going to fix it, made a whole deal out of it,
and didn't do shit.
Did not, yeah. And instead, yeah, it was like these like just average folks from across the world who happened to have a very, very specific skill set and lack of fear, basically. And the documentary goes over day to day over the course of, I think it was like almost 2 weeks, maybe more or less, of them rescuing these kids. And it's like it's a crowd pleaser. Hmm. That said, fair warning, even though it's on Disney Plus, this is about children in like profound peril.
Yeah.
And you know, the children are in a cave system that's fully underwater, and I think they're like 2 hours away from the entrance of underwater. Yeah. So like you can think of all of the reasons that could go wrong, and the film enumerates them. So quite tense, but just really cool to see a movie about this sounds so trite, but like average people who are just really passionate and good at one thing, and seeing them put that to use. I don't know. It really got to me, and I think people will like it.
I will not watch that because that sounds very stressful.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it's very good. Those are the sorts of things that I'm very into, and you know, I like those docs. Free Solo is another example of like people doing very dangerous things. He doesn't have as good of a reason as these guys do, but yeah, it always stresses me out. I wanted to talk briefly about Doom Patrol, which is a show that I think I've mentioned in the past. Doom Patrol is great. It is following in the same footsteps. You know, I've been talking a lot about Peacemaker, which is also great, another HBO Max superhero DC show. And I think DC is doing a much better job than they were a couple years ago in embracing the idea that superheroes, while they can tell interesting, deep stories and like character-driven stories, really need to acknowledge just how ridiculous they are for it to be okay to watch. Because if you just lean into the like self-seriousness of it, I mean, I'm sorry, you know, the Zack Snyder stuff is not for me. I know some people like that. That's fine. But like, I can't get into that stuff.
I mean,
but
even
stuff
the Marvel
into
stuff these days for me is becoming so Eternals, caught up in its own lore. I'm struggling.
Yeah, no, you're right. But I think what Doom Patrol does very well is the stakes are like not, the stakes are always small and a little bit ridiculous, but wild shit is happening in every single episode. I watched an episode last night where all of the main characters died and went to hell. And it wasn't like an end of season episode. It was just like a one-off episode. And that's there's another episode where the entire house is infected with sex ghosts. And there's ghosts having sex all over the house. And the only way to get rid of them is to call in the sex men, who are like the X-Men, but they handle sex crimes like that.
That sounds
like ghosts.
Ghost sex crimes.
Ghost sex crimes, yeah, specifically. Yeah, and they're not even like crimes. SVU. They're passionate. Yeah, it's a very bizarre show, and it brings me a lot of joy, and everyone's in it in like a really big way. Like, no one is not committing. Brendan Fraser plays a robot man who's terrific. It's great, and I want more.
I'm gonna give it a watch.
Shows like this, I would say, of the like great superhero shows they're on right now, I think Peacemaker's like the top for me. But Doom Patrol is really terrific, and
it seems more my energy.
Yeah, it is. I think tonally, because it does go to some very very dark places, which I know you love.
Yes.
But so does Peacemaker. So it's hard to say. Anyway, okay. Doom Patrol, it's great.
Okay, I'll check it out. Okay, here is everything we talked about in this episode. Vampire Survivors is the name of that $2.99 game where you can just grind and kill vampires. We also talked about some of our favorite bang for your buck video games. Earth Defense Force sadly did not make the cut, but Fire Emblem Heroes, Drop 7, Fortnite, Stardew Valley, and Red Faction Guerrilla, either edition, maybe the remastered edition, made it. We also talked about sports, baseball, football, basketball. The Olympics is happening. I guess it's kind of over. I don't know. It's going. Then I talked about The Rescue, which is on Disney Plus. You talked about Doom Patrol, which is on HBO Max.
Yep.
Right? Yep. And that's it. We did it. Oh, one other thing. I listened to that Finding Drago podcast. I wanted to tell you this.
That was Justin's recommendation.
Oh my gosh. It's a goodie. Yeah. It's a real goodie. I'm very excited. Yeah.
It's the sort of podcast I would listen to on a long drive. So that might be coming up in my near future.
Yeah. I think that's, or if you enjoy taking walks around the neighborhood, you know, to clear your head.
That'd be nice.
I say that to you, realizing that you probably get very few of those these days.
One of these days.
Anyway, that's it for the show. I am Christopher Thomas Plant.
I'm Russ Frostick.
And that's The Resties, where the best of the rest discuss the rest of the best.